From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It is 1 week until the California primary. As of this morning, nearly 2 million people have taken advantage of early voting, which is roughly 8% of the electorate, according to the latest numbers from Political Data, Inc., which tracks early voting across the state. So far, a higher percentage of registered Republicans have returned their ballots, but there are still more than 20 million outstanding voters. You have until 8 p.m. on Tuesday, June 2nd, to vote. If you're planning to mail in your ballot, the Secretary of State's office urges people to do so today to ensure your ballot is postmarked by Election Day, especially if you live in rural areas. And remember to sign the outside of your envelope. But you can turn in your ballot to any voting site or ballot drop box, or you can just do it the old-fashioned way and vote in person. Finally, you can register to vote and fill out a conditional ballot up until Election Day. There is same-day registration across the state. Blake Jones is co-author of Politico's California Playbook, and he joins us now with the latest on the election, as well as other political headlines like the state budget. Hey, Blake.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So at this point in the race, I know that the gubernatorial race, super crowded, a lot of indecision. Do you think voters have landed on a candidate at this point of the election?
I mean, the public polling that's out there right now does have, former Health Secretary Javier Becerra leading Democrats. However, I want to go back to that stat that you mentioned at the top of the, broadcast, which is that just about 8% of people have turned in their ballots, which I think to me means that an even unusual number of voters, particularly Democratic voters, are holding on to their ballots late right now and waiting to see how things unfold. And I think part of the reason for that was that there was such a long period of kind of panic about two Republicans shutting Democrats out of the runoff and blocking them out in our top two primary. But, I think that for a lot of like political insiders, that those fears have kind of alleviated. And, just based on the way that Republican Steve Hilton has been able to kind of consolidate the Republican field after getting President Donald Trump's endorsement, I think the insiders aren't so scared. But I think there are quite a few voters who, still have this maybe this now kind of outdated notion that there's this risk for them of Republicans locking Democrats out. So I think that they're maybe even waiting to see how a couple more polls shake out during the final days of the race to, see which Democrat they're going to, pile onto.
Could the opposite happen? I mean, what is the likelihood of two Democrats locking out Republicans in a primary where you had the two Republican candidates? I know there were less leading candidates, but they were regularly polling at the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely possible. I don't think it's likely. The actually, the person who runs Political Data, Inc., Paul Mitchell, has also set up a simulator to try to game out scenarios. And his simulator does have a higher chance right now of a Democratic lockout and no Republican getting through than the opposite. But it appears that the most likely scenario is what has happened in every governor's race since we've had this top two primary, which is a Republican and a Democrat getting through.
Well, let's focus on the front runners a little bit. What has been successful about Republican former Fox News commentator Steve Hilton and his campaign?
Yeah, I mean, the Trump endorsement, I think, was huge. Obviously that has, allowed him to communicate to voters, Republican voters, that he's kind of the MAGA candidate, whether that's like ideologically, true or not. And I think it's also been helpful that over the course of all of these debates, he's a little bit smoother on stage than his Republican opponent, Chad Bianco. I mean, Hilton, as a matter of fact, used to be a host on Fox News. He's done a lot of TV in his time, so he's pretty polished. In addition to that, he's also led the Republicans in fundraising, and I think that part of that comes too from his kind of national Republican connections. He's also gotten a little bit of tech money too, which has helped him out, and I think allowed him to put a sizable lead on Bianco. Mm.
On the Democratic front, progressive billionaire Tom Steyer, former Health and Human Services Secretary, as well as former California Attorney General, former Congressman Javier Becerra, they're neck and neck when you're looking at a variety of polls. What sets these two apart? Why is someone supporting Steyer over Becerra or vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, ideologically, they've tried to carve out really distinct lanes. Steyer is trying to run as this progressive who, you know, full-throatedly supports single-payer health care, supports, you know, various tax increases on the wealthy, whereas Javier Becerra has taken a little bit more of a moderate lane. You know, he even as Steyer has kind of attacked him for various corporate donations that he's received, donations from Chevron to his candidate campaign. You know, he's defended receiving those and and basically staked out this more moderate kind of lane in the race.
Both have had some challenges or setbacks to their campaigns. When it comes to Steyer, I mean, this has been in a California playbook. I mean, what is it about like the influencers and Tom Steyer? What's going on there?
Yeah, so, you know, he had paid, you know, his campaign had paid influencers to, you know, speak with him and, or, you know, speak about him, do interviews with him, kind of promote his content. And there was a campaign finance complaint about, you know, whether he properly disclosed those sort of payments. I should note that in California, anyone can file a campaign finance complaint, including, you know, people working for rival campaigns. But and then Steyer's campaign has kind of, you know, lobbed similar kind of accusations at Becerra's camp over, paying influencers and paying for this kind of attention. So that's been sort of an interesting development that I don't think that we've really seen in a California governor's race before. And, you know, just it sort of shows the increasing power that social media influencers are having in politics. You know, in this race has been defined so much by them, including with the fall of Eric Swalwell, when influencers, you know, helped in in pushing along allegations that ended up being reported on by the San Francisco Chronicle and CNN that, you know, he had assaulted a staffer.
Mm. What has been the challenges to Becerra's campaign?
Becerra's campaign has they've dealt with the indictment of his former chief of staff over allegedly stealing money from his a dormant campaign finance account that he held in the state. And that has been brought again to the forefront as, an alleged co-conspirator, Gavin Newsom's former chief of staff, Dana Williamson, just recently reached a plea agreement with prosecutors as part of that. So, you know, he's had a couple of bad headlines come from that. He's also stumbled a couple of times in debates when his opponents have piled on him about some of the donations he's received, about his handling of a migrant child crisis that was reported on by the New York Times when he was the head of Health and Human Services, and, you know, even some criticism of his time as the state attorney general. But Steyer, you know, I mean, he's been really struggling to increase his support despite spending over $200 million on his own campaign. He is it's just really been millions and millions without, you know, being able to break into 20% kind of levels of support, which, I think has been a pretty revealing display of the limits of, money in politics in California. And even if he wins, I think it'll still be a display of, the kind of limitations that are placed on communicating in such a large state with that amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, moving to the middle of the pack just really quickly. I mean, regularly on the debate stage is former Congresswoman Katie Porter, San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan. They're polling in the single digits, you know, around 8% each. What have been their challenges to breaking through?
Well, I think for Porter, she really has struggled even dating back to when Swalwell and Steyer got in the field. And that all, of course, came after a couple of viral videos came out. That I think damaged her. There was, one in which she, took issue with some follow-up questions from a TV interviewer and threatened to walk out. There was another where she berated a staffer. And I just don't really think that she's been able to, fundraise the way that she's needed to since then. She also I think maybe ceded a little bit of the left lane to Steyer early on. Like at one point, she was saying that single payer healthcare in California was unrealistic at the state level before kind of pivoting back and once again supporting that policy. So I think she maybe, you know, lost some progressive ground to Steyer. When it comes to Mahan, I mean, he got into this campaign really late. Tech donors did not provide the kind of money that they were saying they were going to when they enticed him to get into this race. And, you know, I mean, he's a mayor of a large city, but it doesn't mean that he was known very well statewide. And trying to just over the course of a few months introduce himself, I think, has been extremely difficult.
Well, let's move to Congress. There are a number of hotly contested races following Prop 50 redistricting. What races are you closely following?
Yeah, well, in the area, the race between incumbent Doris Matsui and challenger and Sacramento City Council member Mai Vang has been heating up quite a bit. I mean, we're waiting to see whether Vang will be able to make it into the runoff against Matsui and, you know, provide her a, you know, difficult and likely costly reelection campaign. You know, I think it's obvious that Matsui is feeling the heat in a way that she hasn't from other challengers in a long time. Last week, she disclosed that she had loaned her campaign $1.4 million in order to, you know, fend off this bid. She also, on her campaign website, has signaled to outside super PACs that support her that they should elevate a Republican in the race in order to, you know, try to secure an easier, you know, fight in a runoff. And then, you know, on Mai Vang's side, she's been getting a lot of supportive spending from outside progressive groups and has also signaled to those groups that they should be doing purely negative messaging against the incumbent during this final stretch. So, yeah, we're just seeing hundreds of thousands of dollars in outside spending and things are getting a little bit nasty.
When it comes to Prop 50, I mean, voters just approved this. Does it look like the redistricting effort among California Democrats will be successful this midterm?
Well, they set out to take 5 seats, and that is, you know, it's particularly important for them to do that because the Supreme Court's weakening of the Voting Rights Act has set off a new round of redistricting in red states across the South. So, but it is not totally clear that California Democrats are going to get all 5 of those seats. You see, David Valadao, the incumbent Republican in the Central Valley, is, I think, going to be quite difficult to oust. That race is still a toss-up. The new district that was drawn for him, Donald Trump still won that by 1.8 percentage points last in 2024. And then, you know, you also see a difficult race down in the San Diego area to replace incumbent Republican Representative Daryl Issa, who's retiring. There's a crowded and messy Democratic primary happening down there. And while the one Republican, serious Republican who's running, San Diego Supervisor Jim Desmond, has been able to kind of stay away from the punches because he's the only, you know, person on his side who's really running.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Blake Jones with Politico's California Playbook. Okay, few minutes that we have left. Of course, there's a midterm, but it's also crunch time when it comes to the state budget. Lawmakers and the governor, they have a couple weeks to finalize a budget for the upcoming fiscal year. How have negotiations been going?
Well, right now, I think that you're still seeing some of the legislative leaders and, you know, governor trying to squat down some of the requests for additional funding that you're seeing coming out of the rank and file state legislators. Some of my colleagues just reported this morning that the Assembly Budget Chair, Jesse Gabriel, you know, issued a plea to members yesterday asking them to stop. Basically asking them to stop sending all of these costly requests when the state is still facing, you know, pretty large deficits in future years when Newsom's going to be out of office. So I think it's still going to be a few weeks here before we see something final and concrete. It takes a really long time just for both legislative leaders, you know, to kind of get on board and establish a joint front negotiating with the governor and then all of that to play out between those two parties.
Would you say that lawmakers and the governor are largely in alignment?
not any more not any more than you know, previous years. You always see legislative leadership come out with some kind of, you know, pet priorities, for lack of a better term. And, you know, the one thing that I'm going to be watching for that I don't think we really have a real sense of yet is whether they are, you know, willing to push back harder against this governor than they have in the past. Over Newsom's years in office, legislative leaders have been relatively deferential toward him. And I'm very curious to see whether that continues since, after all, he is being forced out of office by term limits.
Finally, what is the governor up to? What's Newsom up to? He's closing in on his final term, as you just mentioned.
Yes. No exciting travel. Travel coming up. He is, you know, in this tough stretch, hanging out in Sacramento and working away. We've got a big bill deadline this weekend, Friday, for bills to get out of the house that they originated in. We've got the budget going, and none of the flashy, you know, trips to swing states that have been a hallmark of his tenure.
Well, Blake, thanks for spending some time with us on Insight.
Thank you.
Blake Jones is co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Up next, a former UC Davis student charged in a deadly 2023 stabbing spree that left two people dead is facing a retrial. We'll break down the latest developments in the case of Carlos Reyes Dominguez. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.